Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Even if you are having a difficult time and it's a difficult moment, there is a way that you can, you know, release, like you said, that release, have that moment of, you know, whether it's be free and kind, maybe it's sharing a funny story, an anecdote, a joke, that there are these moments that actually allow us to break that chain of distress.
Welcome to the Humorology Podcast with me, Paul Barros, and my glittering lineup of guests from the worlds of business, sport and entertainment, who are going to share their wisdom and their use of humour with you. Humorology is the study of how humour can dramatically improve your business success and your life. Humorology puts the fun into business fundamentals, increases the value of your laughing stock, and puts a punchline back into your bottom line. Please remember to like, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. My guest on this edition of the Humorology Podcast is an award-winning author and one half of the team behind the Blank Podcast. His book, The Fearsome Beastie, was awarded the People's Book Prize, Heart of Hoyk Children's Book Award, Busy Baby Gold Award, and the US Forward National Literary Award. His award-winning podcast, Blank, asks well-known guests what they do when their mind goes blank. His work uses humour and humility to help humanity hold it all together. His most recent book, also called Blank, compiles a compendium of compelling conversations that provide counsel for creating clarity and calm in the most calamitous moments. On Twitter, a medium not known for its consistent caring, he is considered the king of being kind. Giles Paley Phillips, welcome to the Humorology Podcast.
Hi, Paul. It's lovely to see you. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. And it's lovely to have somebody who's got such positivity on the podcast. You are relentlessly positive and kind on social media. Do you think it's difficult to be both comedic and kind?
I don't think it's difficult. I think, I guess a lot of the time, I guess we see comedy as a way of poking fun at things. And I mean, I think as a species, we should learn to sort of be able to take jokes ourselves, you know, like take that on and take kind of little pokes and prods at ourselves and the way we do things. And I think actually as a nation, the UK, we're not too bad at that. We're not too bad at seeing the fun and silliness in life. But I think, yeah, I think it's important to be, I mean, obviously on a medium like Twitter, for example, it's very difficult because, you know, there's a lot of anger around and particularly when we get into things like politics or, you know, football, for example, is another thing. And those two things have kind of become a bit intertwined, the way, you know, that tribalism has kind of come into football, from football rather, into things like politics and everyday life. And we've sort of seen that, and there's a lack of nuance now on particularly on social media, and so, you know, you are in one tribe or another, so that makes it a much more difficult playing field. for comedy, I think, sometimes, because, you know, obviously people think take things to heart a little bit more. But I think, yeah, it's so important for us all to be able to have a sense of humour. I think that's got to be our first thing, is to not take ourselves too seriously in life.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's what the whole Humorology project is all about, is actually being able to laugh at things, because from a psychological point of view, if you can laugh at things, it diminishes the way you feel about them. You've had quite a well-documented, quite tough times in your life. And I hope you don't mind me starting with this, when you were young, losing your mother at six years old. I mean, as a six-year-old, can humour actually come into the healing process?
Yeah, it certainly can. I mean, I remember even the morning my mum passed away, I remember coming downstairs and my dad telling me and my brother that she'd passed away. And in the kitchen, so in our family, my dad's mum, sort of my maternal grandmother, was hilarious. Often not on purpose, but she was just very funny, always doing things kind of haphazardly or wrong. She was quite eccentric. She was from Northumberland, and that Durham in particular, a little village called Crook. And I think like humour and being sort of slightly silly and laughing a lot was a big part of the culture there. And it did sort of seep into our lives a lot. But anyway, even that day, like even that morning when we found out these dreadful news, she was clattering away in the kitchen. I think she was breaking stuff, you know, stuff breaking on the floor. She was trying to make people breakfast, burning toast, and, you know, just this kind of like cacophony of just classic things that she would do. And, you know, that kind of, you know, you sort of think, oh, you know, Christ, what's Nan doing in the kitchen? Yeah. You know, you sort of get this clang of news that, you know, you've lost your parent, and then there's this clang of a saucepan falling on the floor. You know, it just kind of breaks up, you know, kind of broke up that awful, dreadful news that we had. So, yeah, and she's been she was a prominent part of my youth, of finding things funny and you know, us slightly poking fun at her a lot of time. I mean, she had dreadful wind all the time, which is, you know, as a child is a wonderful comic thing.
Gift.
Exactly, yeah. And you know, she would find that funny as well. You know, I mean, funny enough, I saw someone had tagged me in a post recently of someone who was desperately trying to get to the loo and skirting across this room and just farting all the way across the room as they sort of darting towards the toilet. And it just reminded me of her. Totally. I showed it to my wife. Said, this is what my nan was like, you know, just belly laughing, trying not to shit herself, basically.
But it's an extraordinary release, because we talk about, I've interviewed people who've been in war zones, people who've been under real stress and trauma, and the loss of a parent has to be the greatest trauma there possibly can be. And the fact that you recognize that laughter was some kind of a route out of there is amazing, even at that young age.
And obviously, you know, I guess those are the sort of things, also those are the kind of memories that stick with you a little bit to a certain extent. You kind of think of those humorous moments, and sometimes you try and seek them out in your mind, like, you know, try and think, you know, I will think back to like those difficult days, you know, leading to my mother's death. She had leukemia. She was ill for a long time. I mean, again, she was always upbeat and tried to be as, I guess for us as a family, tried to be as upbeat and as positive as she could, even up until she passed away. And she was ill for 3 years with very intense leukemia. But always tried to put on a smile and have a brave face, you know. And I think, again, that sort of seeped into, and I guess a lot of what I try and put out now as well, model with my social media presence, is that, you know, even if you are having a difficult time and it's a difficult moment, there is a way that you can, you know, release, like you said, that release, have that moment of, you know, whether it's be free and kind, maybe it's sharing a funny story, an anecdote, a joke, that there are these moments that actually allow us to break that chain of distress that you're going through, and think about the world, and it's very much a part of the human condition, isn't it, to find these moments that give us that release.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, I know that you're very helpful to the hundreds of thousands of people around the world and who are going through difficult times of depression and grief and all the, those things. Do you think you can help not just post something happening to people, but by giving people resilience by using humor or attitude or kindness or whatever we term it as?
Yeah, absolutely. I think even if you're, you know, if you're in the eye of the storm of that moment, wherever you're going through, I think that is really important to dig into those feelings and those, you know, I think, like, with regards to kindness, I think, you know, there's that sort of philosophical sort of question is whether is there a moment of kindness or an act of kindness that isn't selfish in some way? Because, you know, what we do when we're kind or we're nice or we're positive or we say something funny, well, you know, wherever it might be, you know, being humorous as well, we're getting something out of that as ourselves to a certain extent. Yeah. But that's a good thing. You know, that is good. That's great. Because I think if you're going through a difficult time, and when I'm feeling down or anxious or anything, I sort of lean into those sort of things because they often make me feel better. They lift my mood. And I think obviously if you're doing that for someone else, it's lifting their mood as well. So you have this kind of, you're both having these moments where you're feeling lifted or empowered or inspired, whatever it might be. And I think that's really, really vital. So I think, yeah, there is something to be said for that. Definitely. So I think, yeah, it's really important to lean into those things, those moments, and try to utilize them for yourself as well as other people.
Yeah, I think that's really wise. It's a symbiotic process. And also there's a saying in psychology that if you want anybody to go into any state, you have to go into that state first. And so you are the living embodiment of somebody who is going and staying in a positive state and taking people with you. And I think that's, you know, a model that actually other people can copy, because, you know, we all know those people that I was recently talking about this with Joe Brand, the dementors who come and suck your energy. And actually, Joe came up with a wonderful term, which was a humor hoover. But you are the antithesis of that. You are actually just concentrating, and I know it must be difficult to do it all the time, on giving positive energy, giving healing energy to people. How do you do that? And how can people learn to do that more?
Like I say, I think there's something ingrained in me. I think that's come from, I guess a lot of it is to do with gratitude. I feel very grateful to be here. I've had some very difficult moments along the way. And obviously I've had a lot of loss in my life, you know, lost my father as well in my early twenties. And so, you know, I've had a lot of loss, parental loss, and, just difficult moments along the way. And I just feel really grateful to still be here. Like, I feel grateful for every day, like waking up and being in this world. And yes, there's not every day doesn't come without its challenges, but at the same time, that level of gratitude allows me, I think, or certainly gives me the power to sort of push some of that stuff out back out into the world, and, like you say, model it. I mean, it's really hard to, particularly with social media, you know, we've alluded to that a little bit, but you know go on social media, it's very easy to get sucked into, you know, whatever it might be, doom scrolling, or it might be just getting into a debate with someone, and when you get angry about something, there's, you know, and there's nothing wrong with speaking out about particular, you know, things that are going on in the world that you don't agree with, but for me, I think sometimes, like you said about energies, you use up so much energies on those things that actually that energy could be used in modeling a different kind of behavior, a different way of approaching conversation, a different way of approaching people and connecting with them on a different level. And being able to model kindness, compassion, empathy, I think are things that a lot of us have forgotten to do. And maybe it's harder sometimes on social media. I think it's easy. It's probably easier to do that in real life. You know, for example, this morning went to the shop and the lady dropped her shopping and went and helped her. That's a sort of, you know, that's an instinctive thing. But I think when, particularly online, we've kind of, that's more difficult to do, I think. And, you know, I've been ridiculed in the past by people on social media for attempting to create a different environment, because some people do want to use those platforms to vent and rage. But I think also those platforms are there to have connection with one another, to connect. And, you know, that's probably why they were invented to a certain degree. They are, it is social. I mean, I think I put a post up recently. It's social media, not anti-social media, you know, because that's what it, you know, it's supposed to be for connecting with people, having conversations, learning more about ourselves and the world through that connection. And, you know, that I think unfortunately that has been eroded slightly. So if I can, in some way, some small way, I can create a community that I'm involved with that are doing something more positive and lighthearted and kind, then, you know, that's become a bit of I suppose it's weirdly become a bit of a mission.
So what makes you laugh, Charles?
What makes me laugh? Oh, loads of stuff. I'm goodness. Probably I laugh the most when I'm with old friends, I would say, probably. I've got a friend called Dave who was around yesterday to watch the football with me. Obviously, we were recording this after England played in the Euros. And we just laughed all the way through. We were just sort of saying stupid things, saying silly things, remembering old times. I mean, talking about people we went to school with and how certain players look like our friends from the 1990s. It just very silly conversations. And, you know, I particularly with old school friends, I think often also those people know you the best, don't they? So, you know, you have these long, if you're lucky to have friendships that have had some longevity to them, I think that those are often the most funny moments when you spend time with those people.
Yeah, well, I was watching the same game with Ainsley, who was on the podcast recently, and we did exactly the same. We went to school together, were you laughing at Harry Maguire's hair as well?
We did laugh at Harry Maguire's hair, yes. and what Dave and I have started doing as well is when the camera pans to the coaching staff and they're talking to other, we start doing voices for them. So we go, oh yeah, well, you've got to slip in down there, all right? And then not him. And so we started doing, like, you know, making up voices for Gareth Southgate giving instructions to the players that are about to come on. So yeah, very silly, but I always feel much better and uplifted after I've had an afternoon with Dave.
Well, isn't it? You see, I think silliness is underrated. Because, you know, that childish behaviour, it's funny, when Ainsley and I are together, his kids, who are now grown up, go, you are like two children. And my answer is always, thank you.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I've got two. Yeah, funny enough, I've got two boys, 14 and 12. So one is in the teenage years. The other one is... And I am super silly with them. I mean, constantly. I always sing songs when I walk my eldest, still walk him to school, and I sing songs to him about, you know, generally things about toilets or poo, you know, even. And what's great is that he gets quite annoyed by it, and now obviously that spurs me on to do it even more, you know, as any good father would do. So yeah, those things are also, yeah, I think, like, that when your kids are starting to say, oh goodness, you're like so annoying and irritating, and actually those things make me laugh loads. I mean, I giggle away when I'm coming up with stupid songs.
It's one of the only, I'm the father of a 20-year-old, and it's one of the only joys left is
yes. Absolutely.
It's great. So tell me a true funny story about something that's happened to you, Giles.
I was thinking about this, and I was thinking, well, most of my funny stories do involve my friend Dave, and it would be on my stag night. And we'd gone to the dogs in Hove, the greyhound racing, to watch and have a meal, and I don't drink, I'm teetotal, but they got quite drunk, and Dave, we couldn't find him anywhere, he'd gone missing. This isn't unusual as well. He's got a bit of reputation for doing this, and he's kind of like, everyone's looking for him. The whole party, there's about 30 of us all looking for Dave. Suddenly, out of nowhere, we hear this noise, and like a superhero, we see Dave in a he'd picked up one of those, like a shopping trolley, and he was I should caveat this with the car park that we were in waiting for him was had a quite a long slant on it. It was quite big, very big actually. All we could see was this sort of far off image of a shopping trolley coming further and further towards us, and then we can see Dave riding on the shopping trolley without any, like, with no control. He's going, he must have been going about 30 miles an hour, which is pretty fast on a shopping trolley. And out of nowhere, literally out of nowhere, a rose bush appeared. And like, you know, those Velcro walls that people used to have fun with? He hit it head first and his body flipped up, and literally he was stuck on it upside down on the rose bush. And all you could hear was this... and you stuck on it, and I never forget that. It was and all of us were absolutely pissing ourselves laughing at him, and it took us quite some time to get him down. He was stuck in that thorny
because road. You were laughing too hard.
Well, exactly. We left him there we left him there for quite a while, and then when we eventually did get prize him out, he was quite sore. But yeah, so that was the moment. Literally, when I read that question, I thought, that is the moment that pops into my head.
Is that wonderful? And you just see, for those of you listening rather than watching this and everything, your whole face lit up just at the memory. And that's, I always say to people that the mind can't tell the difference between something that's real and something that's vividly imagined. So the one thing you are in control of is your mind, and going to things that really, really anchor and trigger those responses where you go, because I don't know how you feel about this, but I'd be very interested to find out that actually we do have a choice of where to put our attention and our energy. And you put it towards gratitude, but you might as well put it towards a great memory of something that made you laugh, feel great, as opposed to concentrating on something. We've all had memories that are miserable. What do you feel?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, you know, it is within us, you know, I think to make a positive change in our life, kindness and gratitude and happiness and positivity, all the things we've kind of been alluding to and talking about, those are within us, and we have the power and to think those things, to remember those things, to empower those things in ourselves and to react in a certain way as well. And it's all within us. I mean, you know, we have to give ourselves those moments and actually think to ourselves, do I want to be happy today? Do I want to be positive today? Do I want to put my energy into good things today? Or do I want to put them into bad? And I think, you know, if we were given a choice, if you, like, someone, you woke up and said, or do you want to be in a good mood today? Or do you want to be in a bad mood today? Well, obviously we'd choose the good mood, wouldn't we? But so I think we can make that choice within ourselves. We can, you know, there will be tests along the way. In any normal day, there are little tests, but it's what, how you handle each of those tests and how you lead yourself through them. And I think we can always do it in a positive way. I think there's always an option to be positive or kind or take something with humour. I think there is always that within us.
Is everyone potentially funny, or are some people humourless?
Oh, I don't think anyone's humourless. Well, I like to think that no one's humourless. I think we all have potential. But there's all things that... I think even the most sour of pussies would find something funny. So I think... I don't know. I don't really think that you can be humourless. I think there are people, I mean, you said, sort of spoke earlier about these sort of humor hoovers or humor sponges, I suppose, like people that could soak up your humor or take it away from you in some way. But I think, yeah, I think we've all got a potential for humor. We've all got potential to do something funny, to say something funny or find something funny. So no, I think there is a potential for everybody to have humor of some sort.
But do you think that potential is, because you said you caveated it with find something funny, so everybody can find something funny.
Yeah.
Do you think everybody can potentially make other people laugh or make...
Again, I think, yeah, I suppose in some circumstances it might be unintentionally making someone laugh. Now, look, I've got some neighbours up the road. They won't listen. They won't be listening to this.
Hold on. We're quite a big podcast. we're quite big round your manor.
Well, apologies to them now if they are listening, because I'm going to be a bit mean about. No, they're very. They do seem very. Like, funny enough, I said the other day that I didn't say they were humorless, but I just said to my. I remember saying to my. They're very dour. That couple, they're a bit older. They don't like people parking outside their house. They've got a big thing about people parking outside their house. They've even put like little wooden trunks of trees to stop people pass. So there's this real like agenda against parking. And I thought, do you know what, there must be something innately in them that is really like there's no humanity there. They got this real. They seem very staunch and very, when I see them, they don't look happy. They don't look happy. But the other day I saw the couple together and they were having a little laugh together. And I thought, well, look, then I must, he's obviously said something funny to his wife and she's found it funny. And I thought, well, do you know what? They're just the same as us. They just got a different view of the world, but they still find things funny. There's still humor within them. There's still something nice about them. It's just that I haven't been able to tap into that yet, but there's something there. So as much as I sort of think, well, they're so miserable, those two up the road, that there's something in there for them that they find funny. So I think I want to get to know them a bit more, because I want to know if there is something funny there or not. But certainly something tickled them, and I thought, well, okay, I have to have a rethink about the couple up there.
Well, that's really interesting, because I mean, I was thinking all the way through when you were talking about that, I was thinking, I wonder if Giles is like me and finds those people a challenge. And then at the end you went, I want to see if I can actually connect with them. And and I think that comes down to an attitude of like, rather than going, those are miserable sods and they're done.
Yeah.
You kind of go, I mean, I keep wanting to go on and look, can I find the humanity and the humor in there? And do you feel that drive, that passion to do that?
I do, I think. And especially if, I guess in some ways, even more so, because there is a challenge there, you know, because you think, oh, they are miserable sods up the road. But yeah, so there is a more of like, I want to find out if they are really miserable, if they do hate all the neighbours and everyone else in the whole of the town I live in. But because I don't think they do, you know, and I think they just got their own way and they've got their own thoughts about, you know, they've obviously had some parking issues in the past. There's clearly a thing on parking, but doesn't mean that they don't go home and watch Fawlty Towers and love it. I think it would be a challenge to find out and to get to know them a bit better, and then maybe rethink my initial thought about them, which was slightly more derogatory or slightly more kind of downbeat sort of view of how they are.
Well, it's very interesting, because again, that comes down to attitude, and this is all about, you know, how humor can change things in the world. But I was interviewing Dr. Richard Bandler, who developed the field of neurolinguistic programming. And he said something which stuck with me. He said it to me many, many years ago. He said, the meaning of your communication is the response you get. Yeah. And so it's incumbent on us to go, we can't go, they are always miserable, yeah, those people. surely it's down to us to find the way in.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And that's how, yeah, of course. And I think that is how we make true connections with people, is finding our way in and finding where we sit with one another. What have we got in common? Because we've all got something in common.
Yes. You
know, we've all got something. So as much as you might have lots of things that you don't agree on with another person, there will be a common ground somewhere, and it's finding that and approaching it, like you say, in the right way.
Yeah, and taking the responsibility that it's my fault if they haven't connected with me, rather than the thing. What would the world be like without humour?
Goodness, what would the world be like without humour? I mean, I think it's funny, isn't it? Because obviously the last 18 months, we've been a very difficult, challenging time in the world with the pandemic. And I guess we've kind of leaned on humour and comedy and watching TV and creative fields a lot, you know, not just humour and comedy, but, you know, but there's not been a lot of comedy out. You haven't been able to go and see live comedy, for example. And I think that's been, you know, and obviously it's been a terrifying time as well. So it does feel like, in a certain respect, we've lost humour to a certain degree, although we've been able to watch on telly and all that kind of stuff. But I think because we've had this intensity of feeling and this, you know, we've been fearful and scared, that, you know, I think perhaps, you know, we've lost some of that in the last year. We've kind of experienced it to a certain extent, maybe. That's my feeling anyway. And that's been incredibly difficult, I think, for us to deal with as a society.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
In the war, or in different wars, people got a spirit. Do you think that's what's lacking at the moment, is that sort of that spirit? Or does it go through ebbs and flows whereby the spirit, you know? Because I remember at the start of lockdowns in the UK, everybody was sharing memes and doing, and then it sort of tailed off and everybody just got a bit tired of it. And it was.
Yeah. I think you're right. It probably has ebbed and flowed a little bit, for sure. And I think, yeah, there have been moments. And obviously, you know, I work with a comedian on the podcast I do, Blank. And, you know, Jim, I know, has slightly changed the way he does things. Obviously, there's been a lot more online shows and all that kind of stuff. But it does, just for the sake of the question, it was just that feeling that, you know, maybe we have lived in a world without humour for a little bit, because everyone's been so challenged and scared and upset and fearful about what's, you know, what the future holds. So it feels like, you know, maybe some of that sort of stuff has sort of ebbed away a little bit. I'd agree that we have probably gone in cycles, and, you know, there's been better times, and, you know, I think like we're coming out of that a little bit now, and we feel there's, you know, the sun's out. That makes a difference. You know, we live in a country in the UK which has a lot of rain. So again, I think there's something to be said for that with regards to our moods. But in answer to your question, a world without humour, I think, would be a very desperate and desolate place. It'd be probably like Mad Max, where people would be just going around on big vehicles, slaying each other, with studded clothing on. I think it would be like this sort of weird apocalypse, a world without humor. That's how I kind of see it. Or would everything turn gray? I mean, I'm just thinking in my head now, we'd all look like the spitting image of John Major. The color would sort of drip away from our faces, and we'd all end up eating peas every night. I don't know. I think it would be a bit desperately sad situation if we had no humor in the world.
So it's a dystopian Orwellian kind of image that you've created out of it.
That's what first springs to mind when I think of a world without humor, for sure. Yeah, like, I think 1984 is probably definitely a good way of looking at it. I think that kind of idea of short speak and not being able to, you know, going to the factory every day and making language shorter and I don't know. I think Orwellian is probably where we're at if we have no humor.
Do you find yourself funny?
Not generally, but now and again, I'll say, well, I think, that was quite funny what I just said. I mean, I find myself funny when I'm annoying my children. But I think that's just like the relishing the how far I can take it with them, with regards to how upset I can make them with regards to my little songs and stuff, and just generally kind of annoying them a bit. So I guess in those moments I do end up laughing at myself a little bit.
To your children, are you like Joe Pasquale? I know a song that'll get on your nerves, get on your nerves.
a little bit. It's my youngest that gets it in the brunt more, really, because when I walk him to school, I'm always kind of, and he's like, no, just can you stop? He's just like, can you stop? And I'm like, well, can we do, let's do one more. Let's do one more about toilet. it's quite toilet based, my humour. I think there are moments where I do giggle at myself, but I'm happy to be poked fun at, for sure. I'm not precious.
Oh, so I mean, we touched on it earlier, but the ability to laugh at yourself and be laughed at is important as well, isn't it? Mental health? Is that, you know, do you think that that's crucial for good mental health, that we are able to laugh at ourselves and also have fun poked at us by people around us?
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously there are always lines that you have to be careful not to cross with some people. And I know, you know, we can all be sensitive about certain things, can't we, about ourselves, for sure. But at the same time, yes, I think given the right environment, given the right people you're with, you know, if you know that person well, I think that makes it easier. Now, I realize that sometimes you might be at a comedy gig, for example, and you might get picked out and picked on. And then you've got to know, again, that is it's not necessarily personal to you, but it's part of an act. It's part of a performance. And again, you know, I've heard various stories from people saying that they've done that at comedy shows. I mean, the acts have. And that's gone wrong, you know, and that is, you know, and people do take it to heart and, you know, can be offended by what's said. And that, you know, and that does happen. But I think you need to, again, you need to sort of check in with yourself and think, well, okay, that isn't, you know, I'm being used as a tool in this situation. And that's not necessarily like, oh, you know, a, like a personal dig at me as me.
If I asked you to write a business case for humour, what would you include in it, Giles?
Oh, this is a tricky question. Business case. What are we, any particular sector are we looking at?
Well, no, just, I mean, okay, what our purpose here, Giles, is we've got to go to HR and the CEO and get okay. some money out of them to make the, to make humour relevant to their workplace. Why do, how do we sell it to them? What's going to be well, better?
I think there's been, I'm not sure, I'm not, I don't speak from a pace of knowledge on this particularly, but I'm sure I've read cases where humour and certainly kind, going back to kindness and compassion used in the workplace will help your workforce to work harder. I'm sure that there probably have been trials runs of this kind of thing, but certainly you can see in like companies, and there are other companies, there are other cobblers available, but Timpsons, for example, their CEO is very compassionate towards his staff and very kind to the public as well. If you're unemployed or
James Timpson, we'll give him a shout out.
We will, yeah. Brilliant CEO who does lots for his staff, does lots for the community. And you know, if you're unemployed, you can go and get your shoes done before you go for an interview. Amazing things. And what a wonderful thing, what a wonderful environment to work in it must be to have that, you know, to know. And then obviously the other, lots of other businesses are following suit in that way and using compassion and kindness as part of their remit. So I think really look after your workers and they'll look after you. So I think people will work hard if they know that they've got the backing of the hierarchy of the business or the corporation, whatever it might be, in allowing them to have, I don't know, more rest, more play, and to have a fun working environment. I'm sure people will want to come to work for that, surely.
I think 100%. And I'd actually give another shout out to Timpsons because I did 7 series for Sky of a show called School of Hard Knocks, where me, Will Greenwood and Scott Quinnell took a group every year from different very tough backgrounds, turned them into a rugby team in order to teach them the skills they needed to get jobs. And at the job fair we had every year, Timpsons turned up every single Amazing. Year, not for glory, but just to give something back. And I think the kindness that they showed was repaid because, you know, a lot of people had been, you know, had substance abuse and prison records, yeah. all those things. And they showed warmth. They showed love. Actually, here's a word we haven't used yet. Mm. It's called the Humorology Podcast, but this is about, you know, a connection. It's about love. It's about kindness and attitude to these things. I think they're all interconnected.
Absolutely, they are. Absolutely. And another word, loyalty. You know, how much you're going to have such a loyal workforce if you trust them with to have fun at work, but they will work hard for you. I think it's a vital part of it. So that would be my sales to my business case to the hierarchy of this business that we've made up. What are we selling, Paul?
Well, we're selling ROI, return on investment. Yeah. It's like they're going to work harder, they're going to stay with you longer, loyalty. And they're going to go the extra mile for you.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I think it's vital.
So have you ever gotten yourself out of trouble by using humour?
I don't think I have. I don't think I'm not quick off the mark enough to think of a retort or a quip to get myself out of trouble. I don't get in trouble a lot, I have to say. Luckily.
That implies that you do get in trouble.
I don't. Oh, that does. You're right. Oh, I never get in trouble. I don't know if humor would be my go-to. I think if I was in trouble, I'm not sure humor would be my go-to emotion or way out. I think I would probably go for full on apology and hand on heart guilt, that would be my begging even. But yeah, human, that wouldn't necessarily be my go-to. But
so you're,
I can see it being a good way of getting out of trouble for sure.
But I think good humor, if we take it as a thing, is what you do. I mean, in the round,
okay,
it is, and what you're talking about is empathy, and you would, and using that level, it is what I think was all part of the process. I don't think it is just about making gags, to be honest with you. I think it's about lightening the mood. It's about showing your kindness, showing that you are connected, truly connected to these people. Apologies, which you just, you know, talked about.
Yeah, sorry, Paul. I was going to say, I think I'd certainly reflect on my behaviour. That would be the first thing I would probably do, reflect on my own behaviour and why I got into trouble and how it affected other people. And then let's see if there's a way of us working it out so that we can feel better about it.
I wanted to tell our listeners about your book, 152 Days, is just one of the most, emotional rides that I've ever been on. And it's written in this really interesting style, which is half prose, half poem. I don't really know, which must have been extraordinary to write, but it really sort of catches a nerve, and it really does. Would you like to tell us a little bit more about process? And I noticed that there was little moments of humour in there that sort of sparked it off. One of the thing is, I know it's slightly semi-autobiographical, but when the boy in the story goes to school and they laugh at the teacher and it seems to break the spell for a moment and everything. So could you just tell us a bit more about the story? Because I think it's a wonderful book.
Thank you. That's so kind of you to say. Really appreciate it. Yeah, the book was a long time in gestation, really. It's a free verse novel, so that style is called free verse.
Okay.
So it is poetic. It's like prose poetry. And it's something I've always enjoyed writing poetry. I really wanted to write this story in that style because it would allow me to convey the emotions more than getting bogged down in prose. So, you know, I can describe a scene with very few lines, and that was really important to keep the momentum going and to really sort of, yeah, really dig into the emotions of it. I mean, the story is semi-autobiographical. Obviously, we talked a bit earlier about losing my mum. So the child in the book is older than I was when I lost my mum. So he's a teenager, but it's certainly a lot of the emotions and the scenarios of being a teenager are real, that are in the book. So yeah, I shared a one bedroom flat with my dad and my nan. Obviously the nan character is very much like the nan I spoke about earlier. That's her, Sarah Race, her name was. And a terrible cook. Just the epitome of everything you don't think of a gran being or a nan. She was the opposite. And obviously it's about a child who's dealing with a mother going through a terminal illness. He's unable to see her because he's suffering from pneumonia. So again, ironically, it came out at the beginning of March in 2020, just as we were going into first lockdown. So there's a lot of themes there about isolation and being isolated from a loved one while they're ill and not being able to see them. And actually it was sort of a weird serendipity that the book came out around that time, because actually a lot of people were able to relate to it because they were going through similar scenarios because of COVID. So it was one of those weird things. But yeah, I wasn't able to see I had pneumonia when I was quite young, and I wasn't able to see my mum, visit my mum when she was having treatment. So that's a big focus of the book. And he falls in love with a physiotherapist who's helping him, and he, there is this sort of, she sort of shows him that there's hope and life and love is still within his life and going forwards. He, you know, even though, you know, you're losing a loved one, those things, those feelings carry on. And the humor was, yeah, it was important. Obviously, the book's very dark and there are, you know, very poignant scenes in it, but it was important to have little moments, even if it was very light humor, just little bits to just break that up a little bit, you know. And obviously the grandmother characters, there's sort of bit moments of her eccentricities are humorous and yeah, like bits in the school and stuff. So it was really important for me to have a few bits in there just to, because otherwise it's just relentless kind of sadness and poignant, you know, and you kind of need to break it up sometimes with bits. And that's the wonderful thing we've talked about today, is that humor does that, you know, when we're going through difficult times, different moments, humor is there to break it up and, you know, give us a different set of feelings to have that aren't just those, aren't just sadness or depression. You know, we can have different set of feelings.
It's very poignant as well. And I think it, and the book really sort of shows that, you know, in parallel, there are still funny things happening. There are still, you know, lightness moments. And I think it's very good for everybody to read, to understand that we're all going to go through grief at yeah. some stage. And I think that's what it does. But actually, you have to find the funny even in those times. And I think the book is marvelous for that, and really, really is worth people finding out, because we're all going to go through those feelings at some stage.
Thank you.
It's absolute pleasure, because it is a wonderful book. We've come to the moment in the show, Giles, which I know you can't wait for, which is called Quick Fire Questions.
Okay.
Quick Fire Questions.
Who's the funniest business person or person in business who you've met?
Oh, goodness. Who's the funniest person in business I've met? Well, I used to work for WH Smiths, and the area manager who used to come around was the... I was talking about my neighbours. This guy was the most miserable person, but he was so miserable, so uptight, so stressed all the time that it was funny. You know, like, so again, going back to that kind of, you know, unintentional funniness, I've never known someone so uptight in my life. It was sort of thing. I never quite got in there with him to know if there was a way in to like just ease some of the tension for him. But yeah, I mean, it was always spattered down the hatches if the area manager was coming down, because just funny.
Isn't that funny? I had this image in my head, because I know exactly the kind of person you did. When I was young, I worked with a good friend of mine who's sadly passed on now, called Tim Graham. We worked at the post office, the Paddington GPO as it was then. Mm. And we had a boss who was the most miserable person we'd ever seen, but made us cry with laughter. And we called him fucking hell. Because
that's perfect for this guy as well, actually.
Yeah. That's all he ever said, is he went, oh, fucking hell, you took the fucking piss last year, don't take the fucking piss this year. And it honestly used to make us cry with laughter. Years and years later, we would still do an impression of him. So I understand that that's a whole new concept for the Humorology Project, whereby it's somebody who's that miserable, that they are the funniest person you've ever worked with.
He was almost like Captain Mannering. He's sort of like very stoic as well, you know, like, hilarious. Yeah, so I can't remember his name, unfortunately, but I hope he's happier now.
Me too. Yeah. What book makes you laugh?
So my favorite funny book is Peter Cook's book, So I Was an Only Twin, which is it's basically lots of scripts from Pete and Dad times and all the way to when he did those radio call-ins with Clive Anderson. And well, he did some interviews with Clive Anderson when he went on, didn't he?
He did interviews, but he did the radio stuff with Clive Bull, who we've had on the podcast.
Oh, well, there you go. You see, yeah, I mean, the book is just one. I can pick it. One, it's great because it's scripts. You can just pick it up and read through. But some of the dialogue is just unbelievable. I mean, it's just some of the funniest things I've ever read. And obviously, I've gone back and I've got an old DVD. I know the BBC lost a lot of the footage from the early shows, which is because they taped over them. Madness. But what's left, I've obviously gone back and watched again. And the Pete and Doug stuff is just, it's so wonderful.
Oh, I completely agree. What film makes you laugh, Jas?
Well, there's loads of films, actually. I mean, going back, I mean, I think one of the first comedy films I probably watched was Life of Brian. So I've always been a big Monty Python fan. And that film still is just still, it's still as fresh as it was then. Brilliant, brilliant film. But funny enough, a film that I'm very warm, it's not the funniest film in the world, but my son finds it absolutely hilarious, is Happy Gilmore, which is the Adam Sandler movie, which, yeah, about golf. And what's lovely is that he's old enough to watch it now. And, you know, he's always quoting it. All the bits with the mentor who's had his hand eaten by a crocodile, played by Cole Weathers beautifully. Yeah, he's always quoting those scenes. So that's been a one recently that we've grown to love together. So that's always nice when you can. What I've loved is my youngest is really into film, so it's been nice to be able to go watch and start to introduce him to some of the films that I've always found funny.
So now we're going to take a shift to the other side, which is what's not funny?
What's not funny? Well, obviously, anything that is truly offensive to minority groups, I wouldn't find funny. It's tricky nowadays because I think, you know, and I know Ricky Gervais has talked about this quite a lot extensively, about that everything should be funny. You know, everything's open to humor. But I guess there are certain things that you shouldn't make light of, you know, and that's always a fine line. And I find it, you know, it's incredibly difficult, I think, for comedians or comedy writers to find a balance sometimes in what they're putting out there. And you know, we're in a rapidly changing world as well, so it's finding that.
Isn't there also something, we were talking about this with Joe Brandon, something about which is it done with the right attitude? Is it done from your standpoint, you know, is it cruel or is it ultimately kind and just observational? And isn't it something to do with that should everything be allowed to be humorous? But so, I mean, the point Ricky Gervais makes, of course, which is a very valid one, is that everything is funny until it's about you, about something that if people with beards, you know, you hold on, that you've gone too far now.
And I guess, you know, we've got to be, you know, I think it's important that, you know, talking about minority comedy, that those people are allowed to talk about their experiences. And, you know, if you're talking about stand-up comedy, for example, giving the opportunities to those people to come out and do their comedy about their experiences and that they can talk about those things, I think that's probably where needs to be a key change, and giving opportunities to those comedians more so that we, you know, we can have a better array of comedy out there and that we can hear from other people, but let it be them doing the comedy as opposed to other people.
I think that's a very valid point. What word makes you laugh?
I mean, who?
That's a brilliant. I could see it coming, to be honest with you. It was like you played it in your head. I was reading your eye accessing cues, and I go, here comes Pooh.
I know, because it's just it's such a silly word. And going back to my songs that I composed for my son, very organically when we walk down the road, Pooh rhymes with so many different things. You see, it's a very easy word to use in songs. So yeah, that's why I love it so much. And it just never fails to make me laugh. I mean, I say to my children, if they're in a bad mood, I say to them, if I say, I'm going to make you laugh, okay? And all I'm going to do is say poo. And, you know, and after about the third poo or the fourth poo, they're creasing up and they've forgotten all about what's troubling them. So I think, you know, for most people, actually, if you just went up to them and said poo, I think they probably...
You're right. We're all fairly basic. What made me laugh? What made me laugh, by the way, is I love the way you described it as songs I compose. I love the grandeur of composing a song about poo.
Well, I was trying to think of a better word, but compose seemed apt.
I don't know. I just had this mental image of you
conducting a full orchestra of people, like
wearing a tailcoat and sort of like drawing out the dots, you know.
Yeah.
And I think it'll go to poo at the end. Would you rather be considered clever or funny?
Oh, funny, definitely. Yeah, definitely funny, I think.
Maybe I should add in the word kind, clever, kind, or funny. Do you have to choose between those?
Oh, goodness, now that's harder. Yeah, I guess kind would be the one, I think. Yeah, if I had to choose between those two. I've never been bothered about being clever. I didn't do necessarily very well at school. I wasn't academic. I know what I know, and that's enough, probably. And, you know, I learn along the way the rest of the stuff that I probably need to know. So, yeah, I've never thought, you know... Being clever has never been a big priority to me. But yeah, being kind and funny would definitely be a priority over being clever.
Well, by the way, I think that is clever. If you can live your life being kind and funny, I think, you know, you're automatically clever at that one. And finally, Giles, desert island gags. You can only take one gag with you to a desert island. What is it?
Okay. This is the only joke I can ever remember. I'm not brilliant at remembering jokes. But it's, what do you call an exploding monkey? A baboon. Which doesn't quite work, because I don't think... I think orangutans are... baboons are apes, aren't they? So it doesn't... Yeah.
I don't think but many monkeys people will get you on the technicality, to be honest with you.
My kids have brought me up on that.
And it nearly rhymes with poo as well.
I know, which is brilliant. Yeah, not a poo joke in there. But yeah, that's the only joke I can ever remember. So yeah. But monkey's a better word than ape.
Yeah. No, it is. It's funnier because it's got a K in it.
Yeah, exactly.
Giles Paley Phillips, thank you so much for your honesty, your humility, and your humour. You've been a fantastic guest. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Paul. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
The Humorology Podcast was hosted by Paul Barros and produced by Simon Banks. Music by Steve Hayworth, creative direction by Les Hughes, and additional research by Helen Sykes. Please remember to subscribe, like, and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. This has been a Big Sky production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.